Good afternoon, Tri-States. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. This is Ken. I'm down here in rainy Missouri, but I am reading to you from the Friday, March 8th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we now have our first piece from the top of the fold. Dubuque eyes tax rate increase. City of Dubuque officials are proposing an incremental increase to the city's levy rate for the upcoming fiscal year. Dubuque City Council members on Thursday set a public hearing for March 25th to approve parameters for the fiscal year budget 2025. During a special session Thursday, City Manager Mike Van Milligan proposed a property tax levy amount and corresponding tax rate for fiscal year 2025. According to state law, City Council members can approve those guidelines or decrease them at that public hearing. They cannot increase them. Van Milligan seeks $28,223,481 in property tax revenue to support the city's general fund. To meet that goal, he is proposing a 0.25 as 0.25% increase to the property tax rate to $9.9264 per $1,000 of taxable valuation. The rate increase would result in property taxes rising $40.75 for the average Dubuque homeowner. Commercial and industrial property owners also would see their taxes increase in the fiscal year starting July 1. The increased tax rate, coupled with reassessed property values, would raise about $1.6 million more in fiscal year 2025 than in fiscal year 2024. I am thankful we are looking at only a 0.25% increase in the tax rate, City Council Member Rick Jones said. That is beyond my wildest expectations going into this when you need 5% or 6% just to keep even. Complicating matters, departmental and capital improvement budgets are not finalized. To meet state-mandated deadlines, the council will consider approving Van Milligan's tax guidelines with only a portion of the budgetary information members needed. It's frustrating every single year, Mayor Brad Kavanaugh said. It's a backward way of doing things, and I don't think it's the most effective way to invest, but it's what we have to work with. Another complicating factor is tax reform passed by the Iowa legislature in 2023 as Republicans sought to mitigate the impact of rapidly rising property assessment values. It limits municipalities' ability to increase their general fund tax levy based on a number of factors. One of those factors is non-TIF taxable growth. If a municipality's taxable growth is under 3%, there is no reduction. Dubuque's taxable growth for fiscal year 2025 is estimated at 5.71%. So the city took a 2% reduction in its maximum allowable general fund levy. City Chief Financial Officer Jennifer Larson said Dubuque can offset some of that revenue loss because legislators set up other levy funds. There are special revenue levies for employee benefits, such as pensions, Larson said. So what we would have levied for that under the general fund, we can put under the special levy fund. We have some flexibility. Larson said the state consolidated 12 other levy funds into the general fund. but Dubuque did not previously use any of those revenue sources. That did not impact us, which is a plus. But cities that did use any of those levies would certainly be struggling, Larson said. Under the new law, multi-residential properties are now under a residential rollback rate, which determines the percentage of a property's value that is taxed. They previously had been in a higher category. Larson said that will cost the city about $1.2 million in revenue this year. Commercial and industrial properties had been taxed at 100% of assessed value. They are now at a 90% rollback rate. The change is being phased in over 8 years and will reduce the city's revenue by another $1.8 million over that time. Those are two significant revenue losses in a short period of time, Larson said. Jones said state lawmakers made promises to backfill for some prior budgetary losses related to state law changes, and they did for a couple of years, but now have stopped. They are not keeping their word, and their words are laws, not just ideas, Jones said. The legislature has done some things that I think are ill-advised and are not helpful, but harmful to cities. Of the $3.2 million in improvement packages requested by city department heads, Van Milligan has recommended $890,417 of it for approval. Kavanaugh said it sends a message when the property tax rate is going up, but the city manager has recommended against most of what staff has asked for. Staff isn't just making these requests because they feel like it, Kavanaugh said. They are making these decisions based on the daily services they provide, but also based on the feedback they receive from residents. Kavanaugh said there is a regular discussion about fire department staffing, but several positions likely will go unfilled again. This is part of the challenge of the new law, Kavanaugh said. When growth is capped, we can't really just go raising taxes to fill those positions. But it is definitely something we need to think about in the future. Despite the changes and the challenges, Jones said he remains optimistic about Dubuque's financial future. All of the things that are happening with DRA and Chaplin-Schmidt Island should put us in a better position than most cities over the long haul, Jones said. Now our next front page piece. Iowa legislature's school funding increase uneven between chambers. In recent weeks, the Iowa House has passed a 3% increase to per pupil state funding of public school districts, along with increases to minimum pay for teachers and educational support staff. But the Iowa Senate left the Capitol on Thursday, having considered neither its own public school funding proposal nor the House's. It also unexpectedly pulled its version of Republicans' proposals to restructure area education agencies' roles in providing schools special education and support services from the debate calendar just 2 days prior. The Senate AEA bill also included the Senate's plan for increasing teacher pay. While the legislature, with Republican control in both chambers, takes even longer than usual to agree on state funding for public education, school districts are trying to build budgets for the upcoming fiscal year without knowing what their revenues from the state will be. It's not completely shooting in the dark, Western Dubuque Community School District Superintendent Dan Butler told the Telegraph Herald on Thursday, but it would be really nice if we actually knew what funding to expect from the state. Because there are two things that make up our budget. Both are out of our control. Those are enrollment and state supplemental aid. State law requires the legislature to set SSA by day 30 of each session so schools can comfortably begin their budget building. But for each of the past 5 years, the legislature has cruised far past that deadline. And the legislature's property tax reform from last year required schools to submit their maximum tax levies to their county auditors by March 15th, up from their previous April 15th deadline, so auditors can mail the property tax statements to residents. Those deadlines are just got pushed up because of legislation from last year, Dubuque Community Schools Superintendent Amy Hawkins told the TH on Thursday. So that timeline has gotten much tighter. So now, more than ever, it's important for us to know what support we get early. It really delays all of the things we do in the spring. So far, the Senate Education Committee has only gotten as far as advancing a bill to waive the 30-day deadline more than a month ago. Iowa Senator Kerry Colker, Republican Dyersville, told the TH on Thursday that Senate Republicans' internal negotiations over the AEA changes had delayed the chamber's SSA decision. The involvement of that issue kind of pushed back the SSA, she said. We want to make sure all AEA bill components are covered. I want to consider each of those separately. But obviously, they're both education, so those conversations have a lot of overlap. Republican Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds proposed a 2.5% increase to SSA in her condition of the state address this year, which Senate Education Committee Republican measures have referred to as a starting point to negotiations. While the 3% increase passed by the House would give more than what Reynolds proposed, Hawkins said it does not keep up with schools' rising costs. We still have inflation on many things, she said, and 3% new money for us, with Dubuque's declining enrollment, already means about 2.3%. On Thursday, the House succeeded in passing a bipartisan increase to minimum pay for starting teachers and educational support staff while creating a new fund to financially reward experienced teachers. The new $22 million fund would come from the state's flush reserves. Increasing teacher pay had also been one of Reynolds' priorities this year. The bill would also, after an amendment, give districts 30 days after the legislature eventually passes SSA to provide their tax statement to their county auditors. It would also, per the amendment, allow teachers to return to a school's employment as a substitute teacher, for instance, after just 1 month of receiving their pension payments, rather than the current 4-month waiting period. The bill's floor manager, Representative Bill Gustaf, Republican Des Moines, praised the bill as a kumbaya moment of bipartisanship. This is a good bill that checks a lot of boxes and meets the priorities of many people, he said. Thanking Reynolds for prioritizing increased teacher pay, this will be the single largest boost to teacher pay in Iowa history. Iowa Representative Lindsey James, Dubuque Democrat, told the Telegraph Herald she was excited about the bill. We would have done a lot more, she said, of higher minimum pay increases proposed by Democrats in the minority. But we're grateful for anything the majority will join us in when it comes to increasing teachers' pay. I'm really glad that Republicans have finally woken up to the reality that teachers are not paid what they're due. Hawkins said she was cautiously optimistic about the teacher pay bill. I'm all about giving people raises and paying people more money when it's feasible and sustainable, she said, because we know that right now in education they deserve that. But we have to make sure that there's funding that supports those increases. And we haven't seen what that will actually look like for Dubuque Community Schools. Butler, too, supports increasing pay for educators, but maintained the position he shared with the TH at the state capitol last month, that the same dollars used for the funded mandate in the teacher pay bill would help districts even more if added to SSA. Friday, March 15th, is the last day for each chamber's bills to pass out of their first committee in the other chamber. Kolker said she expects both the AEA and SSA bills to be debated on the Senate floor soon. And now our final front page piece. We have first with it a very large picture of a lady with a zebra colored, not zebra, excuse me, a leopard colored package in her lap, looking around and as though she's excited and such, surrounded and behind by a number of young ladies. It appears to be in a cosmetology setting. And on the back, it says something, 100 happy birthday. And below it, the caption reads, B. Bulow opens a gift as Capri College students celebrate her 100th birthday during her weekly visit to have her hair and nails done at the Dubuque Cosmetology School on Thursday. And our article is Birthday Bash for Beloved B. B. Bulow stepped through the doors of Capri College in Dubuque on Thursday afternoon, and her eyes widened in astonishment. The salon was festooned with decorations in leopard print, her favorite pattern, and the crowd of assembled staff and students from the cosmetology school were wearing leopard print shoes and shirts. A banner on the nearby brick wall read, "Happy Birthday," and the trio of balloons hanging above it revealed the birthday girl's age, 100. As the group broke into a chorus of happy birthday, Bulow's eyes filled with tears. "You guys are beautiful," she said. "I won't forget this." Bulow, who will celebrate her 100th birthday on Thursday, March 14th, has been coming to Capri for cosmetology services since the school opened in Dubuque in 1966. In honor of her milestone birthday, the college held a surprise celebration for Bulow at her weekly appointment Thursday. Born and raised in Dubuque, Bulow was 42 years old when she first began coming to Capri. At the time, the school was operating out of a space at 521 Main Street that since has become a parking lot, according to owner Charles Fegan, who purchased the school that would become Capri in 1966. "As we grew, First National Bank moved out of the building next door to where we were, and we expanded into their space," he said. "Then we bought this building at 395 Main Street in 1968, but it took a year of renovations before we opened up here." Throughout the moves, Bulow stayed with the school, working with a long line of cosmetology students. Part of her loyalty to Capri came down to practicality. The school's services were less expensive than those of many other cosmetology businesses. But Bulow also appreciated the energy and enthusiasm of the students who took care of her hair each week. "I like being around the young kids. I always did," she said. Cosmetology student Grace Dunn has worked with Bulow for the past few months. Each week, she washes and styles Bulow's hair, giving it a trim when necessary. "She's the sweetest lady I ever did meet," Dunn said. "Sweet and sassy, too." On Thursday, she wrapped Bulow in a black barber's cape with a yellow pin on it that read, "It's my birthday." Then Dunn helped her open a pair of gifts, a white leopard print tumbler marked with her name and a t-shirt that read Capri College in leopard print to match those worn by many of the students that day. "I'll wear it every day," Bulow said, as the students laughed. Thank you all. Bulow's daughter, Sue B. Breitbach, who brought her to the appointment, said her mother has been known for years as the Leopard Lady, both at Capri and in the Dubuque community, in honor of her longtime love of the animal pattern. I can't think of anything she doesn't have in leopard, Breitbach said. She recalled her mother's leopard print rugs and chairs, the leopard tape she would use to fix money inside birthday cards, and the leopard-themed interior of the car she drove up until she was 94 years old. Breitbach now regularly brings her mother to the weekly appointments. She has been notified that the school was planning a birthday celebration for Bulow, but said she was blown away by the decorations and enthusiasm from staff and students on Thursday. They've always been very, very kind to her here, but I really didn't expect this, she said. Christopher Bulow, a barber who recently moved back to Dubuque from California and is completing his Iowa licensure requirements at Capri, is B. Bulow's great-nephew. He loves getting the chance to catch up with her great-aunt at the school each week, and said she has become a sort of celebrity for Capri staff and students. She never misses a week, he said. Fegan, who now shares ownership of Capri with his children, dropped by to wish Bulow a happy birthday while Dunn painted Bulow's nails a light shade of lavender. He said Bulow is almost certainly the school's longest tenured customer and described her as a delight for students to work with. That's what a stylist lives for, to get those longtime clients that just keep coming back, he said. And Bulow plans to keep coming back for a while longer. I think you all might miss me a little bit when I'm gone, she said to Dunn and fellow cosmetology student Lexi Potts, a smirk spreading across her face. But I'm not going anywhere yet. I've talked to God, and he agrees with me. Now we'll turn to our opinion page and our view, the quick takes that represent the points of view of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald editorial board. And again, we have three smiley faces. And our first one is, area libraries pull together to get residents reading. For the second consecutive year, local libraries across Dubuque County are banding together to engage readers in what amounts to a giant book club. Bringing people together to read and discuss books is always a great idea. When the subject matter explores a topic that will raise awareness and open people's eyes to a viewpoint they might not be familiar with, all the better. Dubuque's Carnegie Stout Public Library, Clark University Library, Dubuque County Library District, James Kennedy Public Library in Dyersville, Loras College Library, University of Dubuque Library, Divine Word College Library, Cascade Iowa Public Library, and Wartburg Seminary Library all are participating in the Dubuque County Reads Initiative, and anyone is welcome to get on board. A series of community conversations will be held from March 27th to April 13th to discuss the book, The Personal Librarian, by Marie Benedict and Victoria Christopher Murray. This year's title tells the story of J.P. Morgan's personal librarian, Belle DaCosta Green, a Black American woman who hid her identity and passed as a white woman in order to protect her family and leave a lasting legacy that enriched our nation, a press release states. Here's another example of the great impact libraries have on our communities and how reading can help bring people together. Check out The Personal Librarian at your local library. Our next smiley face. It's great to see members of a Farley family stepping up to reopen the town's legacy grocery store next month, nearly 2 years after it was shuttered following a fire. Greenwood's Grocery, 112 First Street North, had been owned and operated by the Greenwood family since 1946 when the business caught fire early in the morning on May 6, 2022. The resulting blaze destroyed much of the store's goods and interior infrastructure, plus two apartments on the building's second floor and a portion of the building's roof. At the time, the building was expected to be a total loss, and Farley's only grocery store was lost with it. Soon after, then-owner Tim Greenwood shared plans to rebuild, and less than 2 years later, Greenwood's Grocery last week announced the business's official return soon. However, this time, the business will be owned and operated not by the Greenwoods, but by another local family. Christy Pitts said she, her parents, Peter and Lori Simon, and other family members now own and are reopening Greenwoods. In this day and age, for a town the size of Farley, to have its own grocery store is an enormous boon. Despite Farley having just 1,833 residents, the grocery store survived with strong local support. Cheers to the Pitts and Simon crew for bringing local grocery shopping back to Farley, and for the Farley area residents for supporting an independent store. Our third and final smiley face? Got beef with city spending? Here's your chance to weigh in on how tax dollars are spent in the city of Dubuque. As the decision-making process begins, this is a great time to be part of the effort. A series of public meetings on the City of Dubuque's proposed budget for the next fiscal year will be held in the coming weeks. The Dubuque City Council meetings are part of the process to create the budget for fiscal year 2025, which starts July 1. City leaders encourage area residents and stakeholders to attend the meetings to provide input or reach out to council members directly with their thoughts. A list of city meeting dates is available at cityofdubuque.org/FY2025budget. All meetings will be held at 6:30 p.m. in the City Council Chambers on the second floor of the Historic Federal Building, 350 West 6th Street. The meetings also will be shown live on Mediacom cable channels 8 and 117.2 and MON channel 5 on the city's website at cityofdubuque.org/media. And on the city's Facebook page at facebook.com/cityofdubuque. Complaining about how government spends money won't do much good. Here's an opportunity for those who want to voice an opinion to have their say. And today we have two letters to the editor. Our first one: Republicans must move away from extremist views. Dave Loney, Daniels Street, Dubuque. What has happened to the Republican Party recently should concern every democracy-loving citizen. We desperately need a viable two-party system, but the Republican Party has devolved into a party whose salient features are homophobia, anti-Semitism, white supremacy, book banning, anti-voting rights, and peaceful transfer of power in elections, anti-women's reproductive rights, and tacit approval of the January 6th attack on our nation's capital. It reminds one of the 1850s Know-Nothing Party's nativist attacks on Irish and German Catholics. They are no longer the party of Reagan, Bush, McCain, Eisenhower, and Romney. We need Republicans, like the Lincoln Project, to speak out more vociferously to return the party to a sane, non-extremist, rational governing party. Next letter. U.S. can't go back to another Trump presidency. Roger Hoekstra, Dr. Street, Manchester, Iowa. As an independent voter, I think our great country is at a crossroads with the 2024 presidential election. From 2016 to 2020, we had constant chaos and inept leadership from President Trump. Trump predicted that if he wasn't reelected in 2020, our country would fall into another depression and a Pandora's box of problems would follow. Before he was elected in 2016, he said Mexico would pay for the building of a wall between our country's borders, but they didn't do it. He claimed he won the 2020 election, but after dozens of challenges to those results in courts across our country, no evidence of him winning the election was found. Under President Biden, we have had record low unemployment and record gains in the stock market. Our country has added new highways and bridges to our aging infrastructure under the leadership of the Democrats. In short, the Republicans need new, younger leaders, but continue to support a man who has done only two things when in power: tell lies and make enemies. Our country needs to look forward and strive to improve life for all of us. We can't go back to the chaos and hate that so filled the days of former President Trump. No person is above the law, and trust and the truth need to be the guiding principles for our country now and forever. You are listening to IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading and Information Service for the Blind and Print Handicapped, brought to you in part by DuPaco and the R.W. Hafer Foundation. And this is Ken. I've been reading from the Friday, March 8th edition of the Dubuque Telegraph Herald. And we now turn to today's obituaries. Doris J. Crow. Doris J. Crow, 95, of Dubuque, passed away peacefully at home on Tuesday, March 5th. Funeral Mass will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, March 9th at St. Joseph the Worker Catholic Church, conducted by Father Brian Delaert. The family will greet friends from 9 a.m. until 10:15 a.m. at St. Joseph the Worker Catholic Church. Eternal rest and burial will be in Greenwood Cemetery, Galena. Doris lived a long, great life with her family and will be missed greatly. She was born February 11th, 1929, in Dyersville, Iowa, the daughter of Edward and Marie Klusner Bartels. Doris was the eldest living daughter at 95. She was a part of a wonderful, large family comprised of 14 siblings, 11 sisters, and 3 brothers. Doris, while working for the Roschek Company, met the love of her life, Bill. They were married on August 21st, 1954, at St. Francis Basilica in Dyersville, and spent over 60 years together before his passing. Doris's whole life was devoted to her family as a wife and a proud mother of her 3 boys, and she enjoyed participating and supporting each of their lives. She loved helping them in their interests and businesses by being involved with their work, providing insight, help, and guidance along the way. She was always there when they needed her. In lieu of flowers, a memorial may be made to the Leukemia Research Foundation, www.leukemiarf.org, Hoffman Schneider and Kitchen Funeral Home and Crematory is in care of the arrangements. A photo tribute can be viewed and condolences sent to the family by visiting Doris's obituary at www.hskfhcares.com. Winston W. Neguse. Winston W. Neguse, 2 months, of Dubuque, died Wednesday, March 6th. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, March 14th, at Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road. A Mass of Christian Burial will take place at 10:30 a.m. Friday, March 15th, at St. Joseph's Catholic Church in Key West. Roger Cox. Roger Cox, 65, of Dubuque, died Tuesday, March 5th. Arrangements are pending. Eaglehoff, Siegert & Casper Funeral Home and Crematory, 2659 John F. Kennedy Road, is assisting the family. Evelyn M. Lenz, Lamont. Evelyn M. Lenz, 92 of Lamont, died Thursday, March 7th. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11:30 a.m. Monday, March 11th at St. Joseph Catholic Church in Key West, where services will follow. Burial will take place in Holy Rosary Cemetery in Lamont. Leonard Funeral Home and Crematory, 2595 Rockdale Road, is assisting the family. Gary W. Gokey, Prairie du Chien. Gary W. Gokey, 82, of Prairie du Chien, died Wednesday, March 6th. Arrangements are pending. Gary Funeral Home of Prairie du Chien is assisting the family. David Lachelle, Savannah. David Lachelle, 75, of Savannah, died Tuesday, March 5th. Private services will be held. Law Jones Funeral Home of Savannah is assisting the family. Anthony W. Hilvers, Chicago. Anthony W. Hilvers, 72, of Chicago, died February 6th. Mr. Hilvers was born in Hazel Green, Wisconsin, the son of the late Bill and Liz Hilvers. He grew up in Dubuque, Iowa. Mr. Hilvers graduated from Wallert High School, from Loras College with a bachelor's degree, and University of Iowa with a master's degree in journalism. He worked for the IPC, an International Electronics Trade Association, for 29 years, where he led program development with courage, tenacity, and vision to accomplish many innovations. Mr. Hilvers is survived by his wife of 45 years and others. Final arrangements were handled by Cremation Society of Illinois. And for our birth, so there's a little bit tucked in. We have one. Thursday, March 7th, Hannon. Lanija Hannon of Dubuque, a boy at Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center. Welcome, little one. Hope life gives you some good stuff. Now we'll turn to some of our Dubuque and Tri-State news. First up, we have Mazzucchelli principal to also take helm at Wallert. A current Holy Family Catholic Schools administrator will take the lead of Dubuque's Catholic High School as part of a restructuring of the school system's leadership. David Thole, the principal of Mazzucchelli Catholic Middle School, will serve as the new 6-12 administrator for both Mazzucchelli and Wallert Catholic High School beginning in the 2024-25 school year. The move comes after recent announcements that Wallert principal Mariah Reeves and Wallert associate principal and dean of students Doug Varley both will depart the school at the end of the current academic year. Varley is retiring after 38 years in education, including 30 at Holy Family, while Reeves, who joined Wallert in 2020 and became principal in 2022, will become director of curriculum and instruction for Clinton Community School District. A Holy Family press release states that Thole's appointment is designed to foster a cohesive educational journey for 6th through 12th grade students, creating a unified administrative approach and integrated programming while preserving each school's unique identity. Thole, a Dyersville native, became Mazzucchelli's principal in 2022, succeeding Varley when the latter transitioned to his current administrative role at Wallert. Holy Family Chief Administrator Phil Borman said Thole is a strong leader who has done tremendous things during his tenure at Mazzucchelli, making him a natural choice to lead both of the system's secondary schools under the new structure. Daniel has an outstanding background in secondary education, and in collaboration with him, we came to the conclusion that a 6th through 12th grade leader would be the appropriate move, Borman said. Prior to joining Holy Family, Thol was the principal at Christ the King Catholic School in Des Moines for 2 years and at Columbus Catholic High School in Waterloo, Iowa for 2 years, in addition to time spent teaching at Dowling Catholic High School in Des Moines. I really love Mazzucchelli, so the fact that I'll continue to be the principal here is a joy for me, Thol said. The majority of my career has been spent at a high school, and that's where I first became principal. So that's obviously a passion of mine, and I'm really excited to get back to that as well, so that I can continue to drive Holy Family's mission forward all the way to graduation. Under the new administrative structure, Thol will serve as lead administrator at the secondary level with two assistant principals of his selection who have yet to be hired. Mazzucchelli currently does not have an assistant principal, and because both Reeves and Varley are leaving Wallert, Thol said the system will have three secondary level administrators under the new model, just as it does now. Our second tri-state piece we have is Storybook Scene Includes Smiles and Laughter. And with it, we have a couple of pictures, one with a man giving a kind of a fist pump while he's holding open to others a storybook. And beneath it, that caption reads, "Author Alistair Heim talks with kindergarten and preschool children during a presentation and book signing at Sageville Elementary School on Thursday." And right below that is a picture from his shoulders down from the backside, and we see his whole audience of little ones obviously mesmerized by his storytelling. And we now have with it our article. When Alistair Heim writes a children's book, he hopes it will make readers smile. "My goal for writing the kind of books I write is to give kids 5 minutes of happiness," he said. Smiles and laughter were in abundance on Thursday at Sageville Elementary School, where Heim read some of his books and shared his creative process with students. Heim, a Hazel Green, Wisconsin native, visited River Ridge, Wisconsin Elementary School and Hoover Elementary School earlier this week and is slated to stop at Marshall Elementary School today. "Bringing in an author is an exciting opportunity for students to learn where imagination can lead and how books are created," said Sageville technology coach Jeff Dyer. "Hopefully, it inspires them to be creative in their own life." Heim, who now lives in Kansas City, Missouri, originally worked in marketing, but fell in love with children's books when he began reading them to his three daughters. Since 2016, he has published multiple children's books, including several continuing the legacy of famous author Theodore Seuss Geisel, known as Dr. Seuss. Heim said his agent contacted him in 2019 with the offer to submit a draft for a new book featuring Seuss's character, the Cat in the Hat. That became If I Had Your Vote, a 2020 book that showed Cat in the Hat visiting the White House. Subsequently, Heim published If I Ran Your School, If I Were Saint Nick, and I Am the Cat in the Hat, followed by How the Grinch Lost Christmas, a sequel to How the Grinch Stole Christmas in September. His next book on Cat in the Hat, If I Drove an Ice Cream Truck, will be published this May. "It's fun to play in the Dr. Seuss sandbox," Heim said. "I still have to pinch myself that I get to do this." On Thursday, Heim read How the Grinch Lost Christmas to Sageville students, which tells the story of the Grinch entering a contest for Whoville's Best Christmas Tree 1 year after the events of the original Grinch story. When he comes in second, the Grinch starts to sink back into his cold-hearted ways until Cindy Lou Who reminds him Christmas is not about winning. Each Sageville student received a signed copy of the book funded by the school's parent-teacher committee. Haim also read several of his other books and discussed how he finds story ideas. For example, his book No Tooting at Tea was inspired by an interaction between his daughters who were having a pretend tea party when one of them broke wind. My daughter, the tea party hostess, looked at her guest and said, "There's no tooting at tea," Haim said. I looked at my daughter and said, "That is brilliant. I need to write a book called exactly that." Haim also read the students his book, The Great Puppy Invasion, which was born when he saw a sculpture of dogs stacked on top of each other and pondered what might happen if hundreds of puppies arrived in a town that had never seen dogs before. A lot of times I come up with ideas way before I know what the story is going to be, he said. Elena Jurgens, 7, said she liked the puppy one the best of Haim's books, while her classmate Grant Goranson, 7, said the Grinch story surprised him. I didn't think the Grinch's heart would get small and then get big again. Now we'll start looking at our bits and pieces of news in brief. Our first one, Dubuque Landfill gains Iowa DNR permit for solid waste compost facility. Dubuque Metropolitan Solid Waste Agency has been approved for an Iowa Department of Natural Resources solid waste compost facility permit, which will allow the landfill to continue accepting residential food scraps for compost. The agency has, for more than 12 years, been accepting residential food scraps mixed with yard waste at its compost facility, a press release states. The program allows Dubuque residents to divert their food scraps out of the landfill. The facility has been accepting food scraps under the DNR's Permit by Rule designation. In January 2023, Solid Waste Agency officials were notified that because the facility accepts more than 2 tons of this material per week, the landfill needed to become a permitted facility to continue composting mixed yard waste and food scraps. The DNR originally gave the landfill a deadline of October 19th to develop a plan for the required stormwater and drainage improvements at its composting site. That deadline was extended several times, and agency officials said earlier this year that construction on the improvements now will likely happen in the spring. Upgrading the facility to a permitted composting site allows the agency to increase the amount of food scraps over time based on other materials received, Agency Administrator Ken Miller said in the release. This is an important tool in our landfill diversion efforts. Next piece. National sports apparel chain intends to open pair of stores in Dubuque. A national sports apparel plans to open a pair of Dubuque locations. Rally House plans to open stores in Kennedy Mall and Asbury Plaza this June, according to a press release from the Dubuque Mall. Between the two stores, the company will operate over 11,000 square feet of retail space. Rally House is a specialty sports store that offers apparel, gifts, and home decor items for a variety of sports and teams, the release states. Licensed merchandise is available for NCAA, NFL, NBA, and MLB teams, among others. The company first opened in 1989 in Kansas City, Missouri, and now has locations throughout 13 states. Other Iowa locations include those in Coralville, West Des Moines, and Ames. The 3,700-square-foot Kennedy Mall location will be situated near the mall's center court, the release states, and the Asbury Plaza store will be located on the Northwest Arterial in a more than 8,000-square-foot storefront between Sierra Outdoors and Famous Footwear. More information about the store is available at rallyhouse.com. Our third piece, former baseball coach to speak at Clark. A former Iowa high school coach and motivational speaker will speak at Clark University Young Professionals event next month. Kent Stock will deliver his lecture, How Do You Want to Be Remembered? At 7 p.m., April 2nd, in Janssen Music Hall, according to a press release. The event is open to the public. In 1990, Stock became a coach of the Norway-Iowa High School baseball team, which had won 19 state titles. The school was set to close in 1991, and head coach Jim Van Skoyuk left for a position with the Detroit Tigers minor league team, leaving Stock to step in as head coach and lead the school to a 20th and final championship. In 2007, Stock's story was adapted into the film The Final Season, starring Sean Astin. At Clark, Stock will share the lessons he learned during that year of coaching, along with his experiences as a teacher and banker. The release states, The event is free for Clark students and employees. The public may purchase $5 tickets at the door, with proceeds supporting Clark University Young Professionals. And continuing for some more, we find grant applications open for Lafayette County businesses from Darlington. Grant applications are open for locally owned small businesses in Lafayette County. The Launch Lafayette County Grant Program is now open according to an online announcement. The grants are designed to support new and existing businesses across the county. Grant recipients can receive up to $3,000 with a local match required. Any business with a physical location in Lafayette County or a commitment to open a business there in the next 6 months is eligible to apply. A total of $15,000 will be awarded to businesses for various building improvements or costs related to marketing and visual design. A list of eligible expenses and application information can be found online at tinyurl.com/launchlaf, L-A-F for LAF. Applications are due by March 22nd, and all recipients will be notified by April 11th. Southwest Tech receives grant from 3M. The 3M Manufacturing and Academic Partnership Program awarded the $7,500 grant to Southwest Wisconsin Technical College in Fenimore, according to a press release. The college has received $7,500 scholarship grants from 3M annually since 2018. The focus of the Electromechanical Technology Program is to provide a comprehensive education in mechatronics, a multidisciplinary field that combines mechanical and electronic engineering. The program facilitates interaction between students and 3M employees who serve as guest speakers. Visit swtc.edu/electromech for details. Police: Dubuque man reported pain after crash. Police said a Dubuque man sustained possible injuries in a crash this week. Donald J. Duggan, 91, of Dubuque, reported pain after the crash but declined medical transport, according to a crash report. The crash happened at about 4:50 p.m. Wednesday at the intersection of Stafford Street and Romberg Avenue. The report states that Duggan was traveling south on Romberg Avenue when Hannah R. Dalton, 29, of Dubuque, ran a stop sign while traveling east on Stafford Street, causing Duggan to strike her vehicle. Dalton was cited with failure to yield upon making a left turn. Woman injured in crash. Latavia S. Williams, 25, reported pain after the crash she was in and was transported by ambulance to Mercy One Dubuque Medical Center, according to a crash report. The crash happened at about 10:25 p.m. Wednesday near the intersection of Main and 17th Streets. Williams was traveling east on 17th Street when she lost control of her vehicle and struck a parked car. Court documents state that Williams told responding officers that she had consumed alcohol prior to driving and appeared to have red, watery eyes and a strong odor of alcohol emanating from her breath. She was charged with operating while intoxicated, second offense, and cited with violation of conditions of a restricted license, failure to maintain control, and failure to provide proof of financial liability. And now we turn to our weekend buzz, the things to do this weekend. Luminaria Walk, today, Prairie Creek Recreation Area. in 1215 East Summit in Maquoketa. 6 to 7:30, attendees of all ages can explore and enjoy the park after dark. Participants should dress for the weather and bring good walking shoes. No registration required. Admission is free. Call 563-652-3783 for more information. Dubuque Audubon Duck Waddle, Saturday, Green Island Wildlife Area, Green Island Road, Miles, Iowa. 6:45, it's migration season, and Green Island boasts one of the largest wetland complexes in Iowa. Attendees can come and go as they like and are asked to bring their own binoculars. To carpool from Dubuque, meet at 6 a.m. at Banworth and Udelhoven Furniture World, 9396 Bellevue Heights Road. Registration is not required and admission is free. Remembering Red, a tribute to Red Skelton. Saturday, Mississippi Moon Bar, 301 Bell Street, 7 p.m. Red Skelton impersonator Brian Hoffman recreates the routines that made Skelton an American comedy icon. Must be 21 or older to attend. Admission $10 to $15 per person. Tickets and more information, tinyurl.com/moonbeamredskelton. Dubuque Symphony Orchestra, Classic Four, Evening Serenade. Saturday and Sunday, Five Flags Theater, 405 Main Street. 7:30 p.m. Saturday, 2 p.m. Sunday. The concert will feature classic and modern pieces, including pieces by Ukrainian composer Valentin Silvestrin and Brahms' Fourth Symphony. Pianist John Nakamatsu returns to accompany the DSO in performing Mozart's Elvira Madigan Concerto. Commission is $20 to $89 per person plus fees.